Herzlich willkommen bei der Veranstaltung Visual Studio 2012 Launch. Ich sehe, Sie haben alle hergefunden. Ich sehe auch alle, Sie haben die Zeit richtig gelesen. Deswegen fangen wir etwas verspätet an um 9.20 Uhr. Aber das war uns eh noch sehr recht, weil wir haben eh noch ein paar kleinere Technik-Issues gehabt. Also insofern alles im grünen Bereich. Zuerst möchte ich mich einmal bedanken. Einerseits bei den Partnern, die diesen Event möglich gemacht haben, die Firma Anecon, die Firma Cubito und die Firma PPEDV. Und ich möchte mich auch bei Ihnen bedanken, weil Sie setzen alle Visual Studio ein, Sie setzen den Team Foundation Server ein, Sie sind unsere Kunden und wir wollen Ihnen heute einen schönen, tollen Event auch als ein bisschen als ein Dankeschön geben für Ihre Loyalität. Wir haben auch einen Kunden hier, das ist die Firma HDI Versicherung. Wir haben ein kleines Showcase-Video gemacht, die gemeinsam mit der Firma Anecon oder mit der Unterstützung von der Firma Anecon hier ein Projekt haben, das heißt Projekt Merlin. Und ich sage nur Film ab.
Die österreichische HDI-Versicherung ist Tochter der deutschen HDI Gerling Industrieversicherung AG und damit Teil des drittgrößten deutschen Versicherungskonzerns.
Wir bei der HDI verwenden Microsoft ILM-Technologien und Scrum als Projektumsetzungsmethode. Das hat unsere Kommunikation teamintern, also teamübergreifend, deutlich verbessert.
Aufgrund unserer komplexen Anforderungen war es notwendig, dass wir unsere neue Software agil umsetzen. Dabei mussten wir in sehr kurzer Zeit viel Know-how aufbauen. Und da war Anecon ein guter Partner. Er hat uns unterstützt im Coaching, er hat uns eingeführt in die Softwareentwicklung, in die agile Softwareentwicklung. Und damit konnten wir in kurzer Zeit ein präsentierbares Ergebnis beim Vorstand erreichen.
Projekt Merlin. Bevor es jetzt weitergeht, noch ein paar kurze Ankündigungen bzw. kommende Aktivitäten. Sie alle haben ja hoffentlich auch eine MSDN-Subscription, eine Software Assurance zu Ihrem Produkt. Wir wissen, dass nicht alle das nutzen und nicht alle nutzen können, weil die lieben MSDN-Administratoren, die meistens irgendwo versteckt in der IT-Abteilung irgendwo sitzen, die Accounts nicht freischalten. Ja? Um so ein bisschen einen kleinen Anreiz zu geben, seinen MSDN-Account zu aktivieren, da sind übrigens meistens so bis 2 bis 4 Support-Calls dabei, die man vielleicht auch gelegentlich brauchen könnte, verlosen wir unter den neu aktivierten MSDN-Subscriptions sozusagen jedes Monat eine Xbox. Ja? Also die Chance, eine Xbox zu gewinnen, wenn man hier die MSDN-Subscription aktiviert. Wir haben noch ein paar kommende Veranstaltungen, die interessant sein könnten. Am 24.10. findet eine Ganztagesveranstaltung statt zum Thema Entwickeln auf Azure bzw. mit Visual Studio 2012. Das ist eine kostenlose Veranstaltung. Dann findet auch zwischen dem 19. und dem 21. November findet die BASTA wieder statt, diesmal das erste Mal in Österreich, mit dem Microsoft-Codewort sozusagen, bekommen so 15% zusätzlich zu dem Frühbucherbonus, falls Sie das interessiert. Am 30.11., das kann ich auch mal gleich ankündigen, ist die Folgeveranstaltung zu dieser, die adressiert dann mehr die Entscheider sozusagen, da können Sie sozusagen Ihren Chef auch hinschicken, das ist der ALM-Summit. Der ist auch eine kostenpflichtige Veranstaltung, kostet 99 €, also durchaus leistbar. Und für diese Veranstaltung habe ich eine ganz besondere, tolle Ankündigung, weil es hat mir nämlich zugesagt, dass Sam Guggenheimer, Product Owner von Visual Studio, wird zu diesem Event kommen, wird da sprechen. Auch der Martin Woodward, der für die Integration in heterogene Systeme maßgeblich dazu beigetragen hat und beiträgt, wird auch dort sein. Und wir sind noch dabei, noch einmal andere interessante Sprecher für diese Veranstaltung zu bekommen. Ja. Wir haben eine Filmvorführung, für die, die es noch nicht auf Codefest gelesen haben. Das ist unsere primäre Kommunikationsplattform www.codefest.at, für die, die es nicht kennen. Wir haben schon ein paar Bewertungen für den Film, wer welchen Film sehen will. Das sind die Filme, die zur Auswahl stehen. Wer unter diese URL surft mit seinem Smartphone, hat noch die Chance, sozusagen hier eine Stimme abzugeben. Um Mittag werden wir dann die Entscheidung bekannt geben, um welchen Film es sich handeln wird, welchen Film wir dann sozusagen um 17.15 Uhr sehen werden. Auch ganz wichtig, eine Visual Studio Promotion startet dieses Monat oder hat dieses Monat gestartet bereits. Wer jetzt auf Premium umsteigen will, ich weiß nicht, wie viele es wissen, aber wir haben einige Funktionalitäten von der Ultimate in die Premium geschiftet. Das heißt, Premium hat jetzt noch mehr Funktionalität, unter anderem auch die ganze Test-Suite dabei. Da haben wir eine minus 30% Promotion für die Leute, die auf Pro mit MSCN laufen, wer hier upgraden möchte. Wichtig, Feedbackbogen bitte ausfüllen, Feedbackbogen vollständig ausfüllen. Wir verlosen auch eine Xbox unter den Teilnehmern und Teilnehmerinnen. Diesen Feedbackbogen bitte zwischen 16.55 Uhr und 17.15 Uhr, genau in diesem Zeitfenster, eintauschen gegen sowas da. Das nennt sich T-Shirt. So, da. So schaut das aus, ja. Und hinten, ich war dabei. Ja. Das ist eine ganz limitierte Auflage. Wir haben ungefähr genauso viel Stück machen lassen, wie viele Leute heute da sind. Ja. Nachdem ein paar leere Sessel sind, haben wir noch ein paar mehr. Aber grundsätzlich eine limitierte Auflage hat dann nicht jeder. Ja. Eintauschen gegen einen Feedbackbogen. Und wer die Xbox gewinnen will, bitte leserlich ausfüllen, weil wir haben oft im Feedbackbogen irgendwas dort stehen mit einer E-Mail-Adresse, die wir nie wieder entziffern können. And now, without further delaying, I always wanted to do that this way. Please welcome on stage Brandon Bray, .NET Core Team. Hi, Brandon.
Hi.
So I will start your session timer.
All right. It's a pleasure to meet all of you. I hear that all of you are .NET programmers, so I'd like to just get a sense of who's here today. Who here writes primarily C# code? Wow, everyone. How about Visual Basic? Good set of you. And C++, a few of you. JavaScript, and a few. Let's see, how about F#? One person. You're great. We'll get to talk about a few things. So my name is Brandon Bray. I am with the product team that builds the .NET framework, and basically I was asked to come and talk about .NET's past, its present, and its future, which basically is going to be the agenda for today. We'll spend time talking about each of these things. And so .NET just passed its 10-year birthday. February 13th of 2002 is when .NET 1.0 shipped. And with that, we've now just celebrated our 10-year birthday earlier this year. It's a great time for reflection to see what we've accomplished. So I'm kind of curious, how many people have been programming .NET? So we'll keep this. Keep your hand raised until it no longer applies. So how many of you have been programming with .NET for 1 year or more? Okay, that's good. And keep it up. How about 2 years or more? 3 years? 4 years? 5 years? 6 years? And 7 years? 8 years? 9 years? And 10 years. So we have a few people who've been around since the very beginning. It's great to get to see you. And so for me, I really do think that this time of .NET is amazing to see how much progress we've made over that period of time. I'm going to be spending time just going through all of the conferences that we've announced features for .NET to kind of look back and take its history. And from its history, we can start seeing, what are the trends and principles that are going to set .NET's future forward. And so it really kind of starts with, what is .NET? And so for us, .NET really is about productivity for the developer. Giving you all the tools and the assets to make it easy for you to create the solutions that you need to build for today's needs. And so over time, those needs have changed quite a lot. Today, building apps for devices is far more important than we saw 10 years ago. 10 years ago, devices were really an emerging idea and concept. And so let's start with actually just the history of .NET and start at the very beginning, which was PDC 2001. Or 2000, actually. This took place in Orlando in July. And at this one is where we announced .NET and all of its components that really pushed it forward. Now, for those of you who've been around since the very beginning of .NET, you'll also recall that we had the marketing team go a little crazy and labeled everything .NET. So we had Windows.net and Visual Studio.net. So it was a little confusing what .NET was at that time. But that's where we started. And so I've got a video clip from Bill Gates talking about what .NET was, at least an aspect of it from the very beginning. So let's take a look at what he had to say.
And so there's many elements in this .NET platform: authentication, scheduling, storage, security. There's a lot of very powerful demands people have against this platform in terms of how does it preserve privacy. But the role that the platform played in the past and the role it played in the future is absolutely the same. The things that are built on top will probably be relabeled. Today we have a world of applications and websites, and we think of those as two different worlds. Well, in .NET, those become one thing. Some websites will be richer applications than others, but essentially everything that was an application becomes a website.
And that's really kind of that message of .NET was an evolution of something that had existed before. And that message continues today. .NET really is something that continues to be an evolution, and it evolves with all the trends and needs that we've seen over time. And so just looking at some of the things that Anders Yelsberg brought up about C# at the very beginning is that C# was thought of as the first component-oriented language in the C and C++ family. It brought forth, not only object-oriented, patterns, but also kind of this view of creating components via properties, interfaces, and design time. And another aspect of it is this idea of a unified common type system, that everything was an object. The fact that you can box an object, or box an integer, or box, these structural types, and unify them with all the other types that you would put on the heap, that was actually a pretty momentous shift in productivity at the time. Today, we kind of think of that as just second nature. We kind of expect that. And then just robust and durable. The view of type safety really was important at that time, that I can write completely safe code. Now, my experience at Microsoft, I started about the first 6 or so years working on the C++ compiler. So I have great respect for all of you who are programming in C++. The one thing that still remains a very big issue is security issues as a result of coding defects that lead to buffer overruns. That ability to kind of prevent that categorically throughout your code is just a really big shift. It raises the floor for what we need to do. And so the last thing that he talked about was just preserving your investment. This was an idea that we had from the very beginning that, developers have skills. They also have a existing body of work via all the code that they've written, or they have libraries that they've acquired from other sources that they want to continue to use. And so at the very beginning, it was, keeping your code working via interop with native code, or continuing all the COM investments with ActiveX and being able to build type libraries around, import your type libraries. So that was the idea back then. And you'll see all of these ideas continue to today. Preserving the code that you've written over the last 10 years in .NET and really kind of taking all the skills going forward, something we still think about every day. So that PDC was also the place where we introduced the Common Language Runtime. And the CLR has been the basis for a lot of the productivity enhancements throughout .NET, and particularly the idea of this common language. And so I have another clip of what Bill Gates had mentioned at PDC in the year 2000 to talk about what he thought of for common languages.
One thing that we've talked about, and it's a very important issue here, is the openness of what we're doing with this framework. There's no single language that covers people's future needs. There's no single language that people are going to convert all their existing application code into. No language is going to stand still. Simply the arrival of XML itself is a milestone that for any vibrant language, you should have lots of people proposing extensions in very open ways for many companies to be involved in making sure those extensions get done. And so we're language neutral. Every language that you're interested in, we will make sure that either we or a third party have a great development connection to this framework for that kind of development. And so the extensibility we've put in is something that we've actually been talking with third parties about to make sure that we've got that right. And we picked a very diverse set of languages to talk to people about to make sure that we weren't missing something so that no matter what happens in this world of invention at languages and so many other levels, that the .NET framework would be able to encompass that.
And so you see at the very beginning this idea of multiple languages coming forward to the Microsoft platform. At that time, we also started work on standardization through the ECMA standards organization. We finished ratifying the ECMA standard for C Sharp 1.0 and the CLI in December of 2001. And it was later ratified as an ISO standard in 2003. The idea that we're bringing multiple languages forward really has been kind of that productivity boost that all of you really expect from .NET. C Sharp continues to add new features. Visual Basic is evolving with C Sharp. And we're seeing things like F Sharp really push the platform forward by introducing new ideas from many different kinds of programming languages. So 2001 came along, and at this PDC, the primary thing that we introduced was the Compact framework, really bringing .NET down into devices that had low memory and kind of small computing battery life concerns. But the other thing that really came at this PDC is we had a much better articulation of what .NET was. And it was really this idea of services. So in 2000 and 2001, we were talking about the idea that applications were moving forward to be something that you get from a website and that you're marrying this with services. At the time, we were very focused on XML. And so .NET was really that core of the three things that bring forward really modern applications. And that is clients and servers coming together with services. And it's kind of interesting to see that's exactly the world that we're living in right now. A lot of other things have come to kind of help propel this forward, but the principles that were behind .NET from the very beginning really helped with that. So the three things that really pushed .NET, the pillars that we laid out, was that .NET is tied together with XML web services. Today, we would probably say that it's a bit broader than just XML. It's REST web services. It's other kind of interchange formats like JSON. But we're very much looking forward to seeing like things coming together through standards via web services. The new application was really the combination of clients, servers, and services. And then lastly, this focus on it's the end user experience that matters the most. So going forward, between that time in 2001, in 2002, the main things that we focused on with .NET was the addition of .NET for tablet PC. So another place where the principals were supporting new hardware and new platforms at the time. And we also introduced Visual J Sharp at the time. So, J Sharp was just a recognition that programmers at that time wanted that support on .NET. And we're just kind of continuing to follow what the developer needs in the community are. 2003 was actually quite an exciting year for PDC because that was a point where we introduced everything beyond just the basics of .NET. We started getting into the really interesting things that help .NET move forward. And we started to talk about how does .NET and the programming experience of .NET help the platform. So the first thing we talked about was the fact that, you know, we're adding fundamental improvements. 64-bit programming didn't actually arrive until 2004 for Windows. And for Visual Studio to support 64-bit programming as well as .NET, that didn't even come until 2005. For most of us, that's kind of hard to believe because, you know, 64-bit programming is kind of second nature now. But we see that performance is one of those things that stays, you know, with us year after year. We always focus on performance. Practically every conference we go to, we have some session that talks about how to get the best performance out of your application using best practices, guidance, and tips. And Edit and Continue really came forward, so we're starting to see the adoption of .NET for the masses. But by far the biggest shift forward for .NET was the addition of generics. That's changed the landscape entirely for what we're trying to accomplish. And so C# really came along with this as well and kind of pushed forward a number of features that kind of match .NET. Generics, anonymous methods were really the precursor to lambdas that came in the next release. Iterators, partial types, and so forth. Partial types, I think, is kind of one of those hidden gems within C#. For many of us who program in multiple programming languages, you know, a lot of people will say that programming in C# and .NET is probably one of the best experiences they have. And it all comes back to the tools that they use. And so if you're programming in Visual Studio, you want, you know, great IntelliSense, great debugging features, great diagnostics. You want to be able to analyze your code very easily. And that's really because the way that we've built .NET, you know, both the engine and the language has made it very easy for us to build these kind of tools. We still focus on doing that. And so going back to the CLI standardization, this is a point where we started getting a lot of adoption beyond just Microsoft. We released the shared source CLI, and then another company, Mono, which has gone through several companies by now. But Mono has been around to support CLI. We actually continue to participate with the company that works on Mono, Xamarin, and standardization even to today. And that's really one of those open things that makes .NET so successful. With that, you know, the other aspect that's made .NET so successful is the fact that we've, you know, organized and designed using our design guidelines. When we first started, there were about 4 pages for the design guidelines. And over the first 5 years or so of us working on .NET, it grew into a book that was roughly 400 pages. And so you can go buy this book and read it. I'm curious, how many of you have this book? So a few people. And a few people more should go buy it right now, just to help the authors out. And you know, I kind of look at this. Oh, when we start looking at designing APIs for new platforms, like, you know, Windows 8, you know, we went back to this as our starting point. It's really helped us to make sure that Microsoft produces an API set that's uniform, consistent, and understandable across all of the things that we do. And so at first, we started off with a team that reviewed every API Microsoft built. And over time, because we've had efforts like this where we've really detailed how to do things, everyone at Microsoft is really able to build really great APIs without a lot of help. And so now we move on to 2005. And so we're just about to ship .NET 2.0. And this is a point where we start looking at what are we going to do next. We're very much like ready to ship and start working on the next thing. The thing that we built, you know, at this time was the introduction of the dynamic language runtime. But more importantly, was kind of the next step for C#. So we hadn't shipped it, but we started talking about what we wanted to do. And so I think this slide is kind of that interesting part from that PDC that started to talk about the principles of how we're evolving things. The last point is probably the most important for me because it still rings true to everything that we do, and it's the stuff that I spend a good amount of my time doing. It's compatibility. As we move forward, in order to respect the investment every developer has made in .NET, you know, for us to demonstrate that means that we have to keep showing compatibility with everything that we do. But you know, moving beyond that, you know, really what we're starting to look at is now we're moving into a pattern of developing the language that's just a little bit more specialized to needs. Generics, for instance, very widely used, very useful to nearly every developer scenario. But as we're going forward, really helping with specific issues, kind of making them more productive and better as we go. And so at this time, it was Link. So along with that came a number of other features. Lambda expressions, extension methods. Extension methods helped us figure out how to layer things far better than ever before. So we're actually able to factor out code into separate libraries in such a way that helps us build things far better. Anonymous methods anonymous types really helped. And expression trees was really the beginning of something we'll see later with the Roslyn project. But the Link project was really about helping you build code that could easily kind of traverse data that came in very different formats, whether it was XML or relational data or something else. And so that actually is kind of the beginning of helping you write code that you know improved your productivity even further. The other thing that came up, as I mentioned, was the dynamic language runtime. And so Eric Meyer included this slide in his deck. What he included was this idea that we not only have a camp of static languages like C# and C++, but we need to have this camp of dynamic languages like Python, Ruby, and JavaScript. And you know, for anyone who is a programming language kind of fan, will know that you know if you put two people in those opposite camps into the same room, you're going to have a fantastic argument that's just going to be fun to watch. And so I actually look forward to those. You know, and I try to get people on my team that have those different points of view because ultimately, when you bring those discussions forward, you have some really awesome ideas. And so we're seeing that as the beginning of a lot of the discussion going forward. So later on, you start seeing dynamic features included in C# as well as a result. Fast forward to 2007. Like the big issue at this time was you know, helping people build rich internet applications. And so we had introduced Silverlight. And so Silverlight talked about, again, these three pillars of building for server and client and bringing services together. So really continuing that theme of the pillars that we started with. And then PDC 2008 came about, and this was the period where we brought forward and started to talk about Windows 7 as well as .NET 4. .NET 4 was really a release that kind of filled in a lot of gaps. And so we looked at what were the big things that were an issue, and it continued to be this idea of compatibility and helping you move forward. The biggest thing that was new and kind of helped us propel forward future investments was the introduction of the test parallel library as well as the parallel framework. So really starting to tackle parallelism as we go. The one thing I really like from this PDC is we reiterated another thing. In 2008, it was actually 10 years after we had started the .NET project. So we shipped .NET in 2002. It had 4 years of development ahead of that. And Rico Mariani made this quote about the pit of success, and it's worth just repeating. The pit of success, in stark contrast to a summit, a peak, or a journey across a desert to find victory through many trials and surprises. We want our customers to simply fall into winning practices by using our platform and frameworks. To the extent that we make it easy to get into trouble, we fail. And you know, this idea that is something we come across all the time. And we, as we design things, we want you to be successful. And that's how we actually think about things going forward. So at that time, as I mentioned, parallelism was one of those trends. We started seeing people actually getting machines that had multiple cores on them, and a growing population of desktops. So concurrency was an idea that came forward. But the other trends started to help C# look at what we do. And so C#, Anders started including this slide in most of his presentations going forward, so that it's something that we continue to think of. There's always something better, something else we can do. So the 4.0 language really included dynamic features. A few of the others really were just to help improve the size of your application, or just improve, like rough out the edges. Size was also a fairly important thing for us in .NET at this time. For many of you, you probably remember the 3.5 SP1, the service pack was actually larger than the original 3.5 installation. And so, making the size of the framework smaller is something that we focused on release after release now. And, that's partly what we were trying to accomplish with the COM interop features at that time. So again, just kind of looking at how do we have this spectrum of dynamic languages and how will things like C# and all of the other languages start to take advantage of them. In PDC 2010, we started talking a bit more about another project called Roslyn. At the time we called it the compiler as a service. We also started talking far more about asynchronous programming. So asynchronous is programming, something I'll talk about a little bit later, since that's a new feature with .NET 4.5. But the compiler as a service is kind of that interesting thing. Compiler as a service is a idea that we can actually make the developer experience even better by opening up an ecosystem around the Visual Studio tools. So you kind of look at it, the compiler today is a black box. It's something that no one really gets to play around with what's going on inside. They don't get any insight into what's happening inside. But if I open that black box, there's kind of obvious things that happen with the compiler. And so if the AST is available to other tools, we can build even better tools like refactoring. So I'll be talking about this much later as well. Now we're up to build, we're up to last year, where we introduced .NET 4.5. And the big thing here was the introduction of the Windows runtime. And WinRT is kind of that marriage with .NET that's really going to help the platform, Windows and .NET, kind of co-evolve and really help each other build an even better developer experience and end user experience. So you see that the evolution now at this point, C# 5.0 is really about Windows runtime as well as async. And so the support for Windows runtime is kind of important. For us, Windows runtime, as many of you may know, appears to be an evolution of COM. .NET was also an evolution of COM. So a lot of the features that we've developed over the 10 years to help build .NET, all of that feedback went into building Windows runtime. And so the Windows runtime, enables you to take code. The metadata for Windows runtime is the same as .NET metadata. And, for the most part, you can just include Windows runtime assemblies and program against it, and you would never know that it, you know, was different than a .NET assembly. It looks and smells like C# code if you're programming in C#. So it's very straightforward, and it doesn't leave this taste like you're importing or crossing boundaries. And that was a primary goal as we were building this project. So now we're back at the present, and it's time to start talking about the fun things we can do here. .NET 4.5 is kind of our current release. We're very excited to have released it. It's just been in the market for about 3 weeks in terms of, you know, since our launch of Visual Studio. But it's really worth looking back at those last 10 years. The reason why I spent some time talking about this is that we've learned a lot from the past. Just taking, you know, paraphrasing a quote from Winston Churchill, you know, you have to look deeply into the past to have any insight, you know, into the future. And that's really what we're doing here. It's that, you know, from the very beginning, .NET has been about, you know, supporting the many platforms Microsoft has, whether that's server through ASP.NET, or devices with Compact Framework, or just simply building libraries to support things like, you know, tablet PC. And so we continue to look at that as our goal, is to support the platforms that are relevant going forward. Advancing developer productivity is still quite important for us. Productivity often starts with just compatibility. You know, if you don't have to rewrite all of your code, that's just productivity. But beyond that, you know, how do I write far less code? If you can look back at .NET 1.0, where you didn't have generics, you didn't have async, you didn't have link, how many lines of code it would take to write equivalent code that you could today? And so it's quite amazing how much more productive people can be. And of course, connecting developers to the important industry trends. So a few of these trends, like one that's quite important today, is the consumerization of IT. The idea that, you know, people are coming to work bringing their own devices. They have their own phones that they want to buy, and they still want to get their email on it. You know, 5 years ago, corporate IT would, you know, have, you know, given very strict rules that you can only use this device, and often it was a device that the enterprise would give to their employee directly. Today, that's not true. And so the result is that now we have to support so many different devices, often on very different platforms, ranging from Android to Windows to iOS. And I have to build applications for all of those. And that's kind of the developer conundrum of the day that we need to be able to help you with and connect you with. And so the one thing I will say that is important is, through all of this, a bet on .NET is really one that's worth taking, because it's our job to make sure that your skills, that your body of work, continues to have value going forward, and that we're always connecting you to the future by taking your skills forward to those scenarios. So let's, you know, before we step into a demo, just talk about some of the things that are important today. I talked about the consumerization of IT and, you know, bring your own device. And that's really, you know, the first thing that businesses want, the ability to have compatibility across all of these systems. You want to give the experience that people want by bringing all those devices and still remaining compatible with their systems and their procedures and policies. But the next thing users want is this fast and fluid experience. How many of you are often called up by a friend or family to provide some help with something that's not working on their computer? Every one of you. And so user research actually shows that part of the reason for this is the performance of the devices and computers that we work with. You know, if the screen pauses, or it just kind of, you know, slows down, people think they've done something wrong. And so the more that, you know, the UI remains responsive all the time actually leads people to experiment. And so, you know, when, you know, my family calls me up and says, how do I do something? And you know, say, did you see the button that says something? Just click it. You know, it helps them actually feel like it's okay to be safe. And so fast and fluid is really one of those things that's going to free all of us up from being tech support for life. And the last thing that's really important today is that people want these modern connected apps. And so the modern connected apps is an idea that every client app can be better by being connected to the cloud. So if I have a, you know, a social network or if I have a file storage, I can just make my app even better. Now, if we talk about what the platforms we need to support as developers, developers want the ability to support as many platforms as possible. They'd like to support Windows 8, you know, writing, you know, user apps that come from the store or, you know, client apps on the desktop. You have the web and the cloud, whether you're programming for Azure or Windows Server. And then the Windows Phone, you know, being able to build phone apps as well. So the one thing I can say is that .NET provides a solution for all of these. You take all of these together, .NET 4.5 has the ability to support your needs today. So let's move on and talk about, take a look at a demo I have here. So what I have here is a sample. And so if you want to see the sample for yourself, it's available for you to download. All you have to do is go to the blog that I'll list at the end, and there's a link to go download this sample. I go through the sample building it from scratch in a video from the Tech Ed conference that happened in Orlando. And one of my colleagues, Layla Diskroll, did this at the Tech Ed conference in Europe earlier this year. So I'm only going to focus on a small part of it. But basically what this app is going to do is ultimately we're going to build a catalog of features so you can kind of see what's available in .NET 4.5. And the idea here is I want a fast and fluid experience. And so the I'm going to be downloading a lot of data over a network connection. I don't really want to download all of it at once and then present it. I want to download it piece by piece until all of it's available to show. And so I want it to show up successively as it's downloaded. So the first thing I want to show is just the web backend. There's two parts to this. There's the .NET catalog, which is that UI that I just showed. There's also this web backend. And the important part here is these controllers. So what I want to demonstrate here is this idea of a REST API. Programming REST with HTTP really means taking HTTP as a web API, taking the verbs that are associated with HTTP. Most of us know the two most frequently used ones, which is GET and PUT. GET and POST, sorry. And all you have to do in order to program this is to create a controller, and you simply have to name your methods GET or start the name with the method GET. And all I'm doing here is pulling things from the database. And so if I go up to this and I return that API, all I have to do is basically to access that API, I have to type the URL. And so all I have to do here is look up features. What I'm going to get back is kind of a serialization of that object that I sent over. And you'll note that most of this object is pictures, and so it's coming over as encoded PNG files. But the format that this is coming in is JSON. It's a very popular web format. And as a result, it's simply the IE interface that's asking for JSON. If I was asking for this in XML, Web API would return this as XML. But now you can see it's very easy to call these web services simply by creating a URL and then calling it. And you get the result back as a serialized format. The second thing that this demo shows, if you watch the TechEd demo, is the use of Entity Framework code first. So I can build a database simply by writing code, and I don't need to write, create the database ahead of time. So coming back to the .NET catalog, the thing that I'd like to demonstrate is async and how async can make writing code that's fast and fluid much easier. The starting point here is HTTP client. I just mentioned to call a REST API, all you have to do is construct a URL. HTTP client is a new API that's available in .NET 4.5, and it enables you to simply create a client, pass a URL, and then get back the result as a string that you can then download. And so you see that here, we're using getString async and passing a URL here that's constructed from this string above. The last thing I'm doing here is using JSON to convert it into a .NET object that I choose. The JSON library I'm using here is called JSON.NET, and it's coming from NuGet. NuGet is a package library that's enabling me to download libraries that others are producing, including Microsoft. And so I'll get back to NuGet later, but I think NuGet is probably one of those things that's widely used in .NET 4.5 and Visual Studio 2012 now, but it's setting the stage for a lot to come. So if you're looking for what is the future of .NET, NuGet really is one of the first things to start looking at. So I'm going to come down to this code right here. The initialize code is where I get to fill in this library or the tiles that are going to show up into this app. So the first thing I need to do is actually create this client with the web backend. And to make it easy for me to just download one tile at a time, the first thing that I'm going to do is get a list of all the IDs that are supported with this this database. And so what I'm going to do is get a list from the web backend. And you'll see that I'm going to get an error here. Now I'm going to get an error. This download API is async. And so this is the introduction of one of the most important new features of .NET 4.5 that's going to make things writing fast and fluid APIs. An async API is one that is marked async. And in order to call it and get back something other than a task, I have to await it. And that, in turn, means I need to make this function async itself. The important part about this await keyword is that everything I write after this await keyword, the compiler is going to split up into a separate function. So as soon as I call this function with await, the function itself returns. And the IO operation that goes along with downloading this list of integers is going to be pushed to another thread that once the IO operation is finished. So now I can do something like for each. And I'm going to also get a list of features. Okay, and now I'm done. So what I've done is I've simply collected, the actual picture. The first is just a list of integers. Now I'm going to get the rest of the data. So now if I run this app, when I run it, you'll see that the pictures should show up one at a time, and there you go. So it kind of filled in very fluidly. Because I was running the actual network connection on the same computer, it happened rather fast. But you can imagine if I was running on something much slower. That would actually be quite a great experience that I could actually use the program before all of the data came in. So now I actually have an app that kind of goes through the features of .NET 4.5, and there are quite a lot of them to look through. And I imagine you're probably getting motion sickness because the screen is so large. But one that I actually want to talk about is the background garbage collector for server in .NET 4.5. So the important thing here is that we still think performance is an important thing for us to kind of go solve, and there's always another opportunity to make performance better. And a case study that we can talk about is Bing. This chart came from Bing, and in May of 2012, earlier this year, they upgraded all of their servers to Windows Server 2012. .NET 4.5 is included in Windows 8 and Windows Server 2012. So simply by upgrading to Windows Server 2012, they got .NET 4.5. And you'll note, at that time, they had quite a good improvement in the time that they spent in garbage collection. They went from spending 7 or 8% of their time to roughly around 2% of their time in garbage collection. And that's simply a feature. All they had to do was upgrade. They just got that benefit. Background garbage collection is taking advantage of the fact that we have multiple cores available today to help with garbage collection. 10 years ago, most PCs only had one processor, and so anytime you were doing garbage collection, even though the program is frozen, it didn't have to be frozen because you only had one core, it would still keep the processor from doing anything else. So that's just an example of one thing that you can do with garbage collection. .NET 4.5 has a lot more to look forward to. And so what I'd like to do is actually just jump back into our slides and talk about some of the important features that are worth looking into. Obviously, building Windows Store apps and using the Windows runtime is important. I showed you async and await. The other thing that's important is portable class libraries. I mentioned this idea that people need to and want to build from multiple devices at once. Portable class libraries lets you build one binary that you can use on a phone as well as Azure, as well as Windows 8, or desktop, as well as the Windows Store. You can use that same binary in multiple places. And that really is one of those other things, in addition to NuGet, that you can start looking at to kind of look at what the future of .NET's going to be like. Obviously, modern programming with HTTP. And the last thing I'll mention from this list is ARM. We did a lot of work to support ARM. When all of the devices with Windows that have ARM on it show up later this year, you're going to notice that you really don't have to do much as a .NET developer because you've been programming for cross-architecture since the beginning. All of the heavy work for supporting ARM, including memory models and other kind of really techie things, we've done all that work for you. And so it's going to be a very easy transition for you to support ARM. So let's start taking a look forward. I have just a few things to show off, that give you an idea of what the future of .NET, as well as just future programming for the Microsoft platform will entail. Well, let's start with just a simple quiz. Looking back to when .NET started, and we announced it in the year 2000, what was the average connection speed for the internet worldwide? Anyone have any idea? Bits, it's pretty close. It was the 28 kilobit, a modem. So people were still using dial-up. Broadband hadn't really kind of taken over as something worldwide people had used. So in order to use .NET or to download things, the size of .NET was fairly important. We wanted to keep the size very small. But you know, the second thing that came up was, you know, hard drive space. You know, we thought like hard drive space would be infinite and going on forever. Any idea what the size of an average hard disk space was in 2000? How about 1 terabyte or more? No? No. Less than that. How about, anyone think it was more than 100 gigabytes? More than 10 gigabytes? All right, so we're starting to see. It was around 20 to 30 gigabytes at that time. So one thing that's really fascinating is that there has been a change in view of hard disk space and how valuable it is. Back at that time, it was still fairly small, but we had this view like hard disks were just going to be large and getting bigger forever. And it's true, we've actually just kind of started to exceed the current limits that our file system and hardware could support, which is around 2.1 terabytes. So we're starting to see hard drives bigger than that. But what people are doing with their hard drives has changed a lot. We've also seen the rise of media. You know, people are taking home videos of their children and storing it, and they consider that to be more important than .NET. So that makes sense. The second thing that's actually kind of interesting is virtualization. You know, for us to take effective use of hardware, the operating system needs to take up less and less space so it can put more operating systems onto a single machine. And so if .NET is big, then the OS is big. So we're really looking forward to take the size of .NET, and that includes all of the versions of .NET together, and make that smaller. And then I think the other question, this should be easy, how many processors on average do people have in 2000? One. A few people in the front knew the answer to that. So we really see that there's an opportunity here to kind of take notice of some change, and that's what's really going to start driving us going forward. There's a change in the way that we develop apps, how many platforms we need to develop apps for, but there's been a change in just the hardware and the ecosystem around us. So it's a good time to take note of that and really start looking at what do we do to make .NET adapt to that going forward. So I'm going to start by talking about one of the interesting things, which is just Roslyn. Roslyn itself is, as I mentioned, the opportunity to open this black box, that's the compiler, and give you access to far much more than we have today. And so it's giving you the abstract syntax tree, but it's going to give you a lot more. And what you're going to get out of this is the ability to create, you know, more interactive windows that build on C# or Visual Basic, hosting content, but the ability to build tools around this. And so I might be able to build better refactoring tools, as well as better analysis tools, so I can look at my code and understand what might be going wrong with it. And going back to that idea that .NET is far more than just the language and all of these other things, but it's about giving you the tools to understand your code. And so the way that this works is this idea of building APIs that you can use. So if you take the compiler pipeline and kind of imagine like giving people access to those pieces above it. And for any of you who are writing tools that fit into Visual Studio, this is a very exciting time. For all of you that aren't writing tools, it's an exciting time once you get those things that those people writing tools can do. And so this really is that beginning. Let me take a moment and just kind of jump back into Visual Studio and show you what this might look like. So I have a preview of Roslyn installed here. One thing you get out of it is a C# interactive window. So something I can do here is actually write C# code, and you see I'm getting IntelliSense. And I'm going to do kind of look at this and get the processes and you'll see all I'm doing here is now I've executed a very simple, you know, query using link. And so you can keep doing that. You can write statements. You can actually build up a history just like you have with any other interactive window. And the cool thing about this is that I can actually interact with Visual Studio. I can, you know, change the project system through this interactive window. I can look at a file. So one thing that I find very useful, I often find myself like getting an XML file that I want to restructure or query. Being able to paste that into Visual Studio and just write something quickly in the interactive window, so much more effective than having to write a program every time just to read through an XML file with C#. So a very simple idea, but you kind of get the sense that Roslyn's giving us this ability to not only take C# and create a scripting language out of it, but you know, far more by giving you the tools to interact with the compiler. So F# is the next thing that I think is interesting. So kudos to our F# developer over here. But F# is it's a functional language in the .NET family. What it is because it's functional, many people tend not to use these kind of languages unless they're familiar with that style of programming or they have specific needs for it. F# really fits into one category that's growing, which is kind of analytical data understanding, showing up a lot more with big data. Big data is another trend where we're putting lots of data up into the cloud, and in order to analyze that data, it makes sense to put the computation next to the data rather than kind of copying all the data down to your machine and using it. So in the next bit, I'll talk about one of the reasons why there's more and more data showing up in the cloud. But F# is a good fit for this. And it's a good place to look at where the future of other programming languages features might come from. So many of the things that have shown up in C#, for instance, started because of languages like F#. For instance, lazy evaluation showed up in many functional languages like Haskell. And that was something that helped propel things like Link earlier. And so the thing that F# is really tackling in this release of .NET 4.5 is the complexity of web APIs. And so the number of web APIs that are showing up is increasing year by year. And so you're getting this kind of tidal wave of new APIs, and they're all different. And that's kind of the challenge that we're dealing with. In order to kind of read a schema off of all these APIs, I have to be able to understand them and kind of write code. What F# has done is this idea called a type provider, where it is automatically going and accessing that API, building a schema around it so that you don't have to as a developer. And so one thing I can just show you is the ability to kind of look at the data and how amazingly effective that is when you have the ability to get IntelliSense off of that data. So I have web data here, which is simply a route into the Freebase database. And so in that Freebase database, I have access to all sorts of things, just going on. And I can do things like astronomy and find out about constellations or comets and so forth. I can go find out about celebrities. And in the United States, we have this idea of a super couple. So you can go, you know, collect all that. But what's really interesting about what I'm showing you here is all of that schema that's figured out to understand this particular web service was generated automatically by F#. And so I didn't have to write any code to really get the IntelliSense behind that. So the last concept of like where is .NET going and what are the trends that we're paying to is this idea of the Internet of Things. And it starts with .NET, you know, goes from quite a range. It starts off with, you know, Azure, server, high scale, high performance computing. And it ranges down into the PC, the desktop, and then even further down to tablets, and then down to set-top boxes. And you see, and then lastly down into embedded and low-power hardware. So we have quite a range. We have both the compact framework and the micro framework that help us with that lower-end range. So what I'm fairly interested in here is the Internet of Things is a trend, and it's a trend because hardware is getting a lot cheaper. And it's the 32-bit processor that's most important here. The price of a 32-bit processor has dropped to roughly around 80 cents at its cheapest, but the good 32-bit processor, you know, that you really want in these situations is around $2. As the price drops, I can keep putting these processors in more and more places. And the best thing I can do is put them in places where I can gather data. If every car had a processor collecting data and then sending it to the cloud, I could gather data about all sorts of things. So one example would be I could find out how quick things are moving and find out about traffic. And beyond that, you start getting to do this analysis of patterns in the cloud. And there's a company in the United States called INRIX that's doing something like this, where they're actually finding patterns in traffic and they're creating predictions to say, like, the traffic is going to begin at this time. So if you knew that, you'd get on the road at the right time so you wouldn't miss an important event. And so a good use of this, the .NET Micro Framework exists today. It enables you to write C# code entirely for devices. And as a result, you know, one application of this was in Venice. Garbage collectors were able to use .NET to actually go collect garbage for real. And it's a great meta example of, you know, .NET garbage collection actually helping collect real garbage. So we really like that, and we're seeing lots of applications show up. But the takeaway I'd have is that there are far more electrical outlets than there are cell phones. And so when you start imagining a world where everything that you're connected to has an electrical outlet with a 32-bit processor, what kind of information could you collect? And you know, that Internet of Things is quite interesting. So I have an example here that I just want to show of a .NET Gadgeteer project that actually uses the .NET Micro Framework to program device drivers to sense things. And so on this particular device, I have a sensor that detects temperature, humidity, and pollution. So you could imagine I could line the road, you know, around a construction project, for instance, and find out whether there's pollution happening or just what their levels are. But I don't want to collect that from each one of these. I want to send it back to a home. And so both of these are like configured with an antenna. And the antenna here is just collecting some data that's sent over. And so basically, I'm going to kind of create some pollution with a lighter here. And in a little bit, we're going to see this LED here turn on. There we go. So you can see that there's a yellow LED. And that basically was just a signal that pollution levels had gone over a certain level. Very easy to program. I have a project here that's just showing us how to do this. Basically, what I've done is I've got a timer here that starts every 10 seconds collecting that data and then doing something with it. And you see all I'm doing here is the callback. All C# code, very simple, very straightforward. And so very kind of those ideas that I can program a device like this, take it all the way to the cloud, and I never have to use anything but .NET to achieve that solution. So as we wrap up, I think, you know, the things that show up a lot for us is these enduring themes, that .NET is a, you know, something that we want to increasingly broaden the platform so that your skills matter everywhere, and that your skills are quite important. Compatibility is one of our top priorities. The time to solution, productivity, is kind of that thing that makes .NET special and very much distinguishes it from most other programming environments. And then, of course, performance has a lot to do. The garbage collector is a great example of something where if we improve something, we improve it for everyone. And that's kind of the thing that we take quite highly with our a lot of pride in. So the last thing I want to just say is, like, what are the trends that we're looking at right now? So if you're looking at what's important to .NET, what is something that I really care about, and where do you want to know it, what we're doing with it, you have to just look at the trends in the industry. There's the dual trend of devices in the cloud, building better experiences for battery life and that fast and fluid experience, better startup time, cloud. Cloud is dealing a lot with heterogeneity. I have a lot of solutions that I need to compose with many different technologies. Many of them I don't have a choice of what they are. They might be produced by another third party. I might be including a web service that was produced by another company entirely. And so I need to be able to deal with that. And of course, you know, I mentioned the Internet of Things, but this other idea of finding solutions easily and fast. NuGet as a library source is something that we're thinking about a lot of investing in to help you find the solutions that you need. So overall, I would say .NET productivity is kind of the important thing. The message, hopefully, that you'll leave here with is that all the skills that you've developed over these years programming with .NET, it's very important for us that you find that a useful investment, and that we continue to make that investment worthwhile. So from all of us on the .NET team, I really want to say thank you for all of your support and all of the things that you're able to do with it. We're looking forward to what we're going to accomplish over the next 10 years of .NET, and it's been a great talk, so I appreciate all of your attention. Thank you very much. If you're interested, you're welcome to email me with any questions. And this blog has information if you're interested in getting the sample that I showed earlier in this talk. So thank you very much.